If you're looking for the skills and tools to succeed in real estate investing, you've come to the right place. This show is about breaking through barriers, breaking through limiting beliefs, and breaking through to the life that you want to live through the power of real estate investing. You're listening to the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Brake and Quentin D'Souza.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. Here with me again, Quentin D'Souza.
Woo! After leg day again.
I got to get some cheering. Like, I need a little applause button. You know? Right. Yeah. That's only deserved. I think we need a title for you. Like, you know, like Sir Quentin D'Souza. Just something to spruce it up a little bit.
Well, I appreciate that. I have my bobblehead Rob. So can I call you bobblehead Rob? No?
You know what? There's not much I can do about it from here. You can pretty much do whatever you want. I'm too far away to be able to retaliate in any way.
Well, the weather looks awesome down in Costa Rica there. It looks beautiful.
Quentin, it's still hot, if you can believe that. It's still hot.
No, that's good. I'm glad that you're enjoying the weather. What's going on in Costa Rica?
Got a few things going on. I'm just about ready to make the announcement, Quentin, but it'll probably be in a future show. But I got a cool announcement to make. But other than that, just carrying on, we've got, you know, I would like to say, though, I know that there's lots of people that are interested in Costa Rica. And even if you're not prepared to buy, I love talking about this stuff and everything that I've learned down here. So if you're interested in just learning the process of buying here, give me a call, like reach out, talk to me, because there's, I'm sure there's more than a few people that are interested in that kind of thing. And I don't mind, you know, it's not like you're wasting my time. So don't feel that way if you're interested in learning.
Well, I look forward to hearing your project. I'm still reeling from the fiasco with the CRA at the end of the month. They pulled the wool out of over everybody's eyes and pulled the rug out under us and said that we didn't have to complete those bear trust forms. So it was a real back and forth there for the getting those T3s done. We actually spent tens of thousands of dollars to because we have I think 25 corps or something like that. So it was real pain. But the other thing that people probably have kind of forgotten about is the underutilized housing tax form too. That one, for the most part, most people won't have to complete that this year as compared to what happened last year. So that's another piece of paperwork that kind of got thrown in and then reneged and then changed. So a lot of people wouldn't have to complete that, the UHT again. So that's the Canadian one.
Didn't make them enough money. Not like this T3 thing. But Quentin, like in true Canadian government fashion, I'm sure they're taking responsibility for this, and you know.
Oh yeah, no, they're the CRA. They would never do that. Accountability? I don't know. Listen, I don't want to get an audit, so let's not.
Let's
not complain so much. You know, the other thing that I've been looking at recently is the amount of job and employment that is being directed by the public sector versus the private sector. I've got this great graph, and we'll include it in the from Stats Canada, showing where the public sector has grown over the last 3 months. You know, we're talking about like 90,000 jobs, whereas the private sector and self-employed have decreased, you know, thousands. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, affecting even unemployment rates, you know, we're seeing that the public sector is actually increasing or perhaps artificially increasing employment, reducing unemployment, but the unemployment rate is still rising. And I had this other graph too that I'm going to share tonight around the different prime ministers. And our current one has basically hired the most amount of public sector workers in, you know, the last, you know, 50 years,
right? To implement the to implement the T3 form.
I don't know, but that's really affecting the numbers, GDP, a lot of different factors. So it's kind of crazy. But all right. Anyways, well, I want to go down that rabbit hole.
I'm going to implore everybody next year to try and help stop the madness. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I'm also preparing for that meeting tonight. So we've got.
Oh yeah, what's that meeting? What is that? What's that all about?
So we got a Durham REI meeting. Now, one of the things I'm going to actually talk about is, like, I've talked to thousands of real estate investors and some of the most successful investors I know. I'm going to talk about the 5 stages of success and, you know, how to continue to generate that success through your real estate business. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about that at the meeting, but I'll give you, I'll cover the first three here if you don't mind. And then we'll close the loop next episode. How's that? So, like, first of all, you know, when you first start out, you get inspired by other people. You see other people succeeding right there. You get that sort of inspiration. Maybe it's social media, maybe it's friends, and they're doing really well. And then that's stage one, it's inspiration. Stage two is it's harder than it looks. So all of a sudden you're like, wow, I got to learn this stuff. I got to start, you know, buying things.
You got to like take the action step. That's probably part of that one too, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So they'll buy something and they'll, you know, make mistakes and fail forward. But then stage three happens, which is like despair. They get to this point where, man, the landlord tenant board or the CRA or the, you know,
the roof banks, or the roof, foundation
tenant issues. And then they get to the point and then they get to that despair and either they move on to stage four or they go back to stage one. And, you know, that's like the shiny object syndrome. Then they'll go find something else. So yeah. I'm going to talk about that, the next one, stage four.
All right.
I can get to it.
I remember this very distinctly when I started out. And when I got to the despair stage, you know what I did? I called you, actually. I remember that very specifically. And you said, carry on, this too shall pass. And so I did. And it all went well, actually. Wasn't as bad as what I thought it was going to be. So, okay. So
we have some awesome guests. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. One more thing. We got. Hold on. Oh. Still, we got a little, like, just a little bit of housekeeping. Okay.
Yeah.
A little bit. All right. So, everyone listening, go over to breakthroughreipodcast.ca. Listen to our past shows. Get in touch with our past guests. Do that over there. Look at the show notes. They've got different ways on how to get in touch with everybody that we've ever done interviews with. So go over and do that. The next thing is one last chance, Quentin. And I'm really going to I'm pushing to get everybody listening who hasn't done this to please go over to iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. We want an honest rating and review. We don't just want you to say, hey, I want some of Quentin's books, so I'm just writing something here. But for the new reviews that we get up until the next show, we're going to go through them. We'll put all the names in the hat, and whoever we pull with a new review is going to get a 3-book package of Quentin's, and they can pick whatever books they want. And he's got some great books. And even if you know everything about real estate investing, I don't know why you'd be listening to the show, but let's say you know everything and you're like, oh, I don't need those books. They're great gifts for people that you know that are just starting out as well. So just help us out. We're trying to get some more traction here on the show, and it would really be appreciated.
Well, thanks for doing that.
You want to say, give the people a little heartfelt
leave a review, please.
It's very heartfelt. Okay, absolutely. And that's it. That's all I have to say now. I just needed to get that stuff in there. Oh, but we do have some great guests, as Quentin was just about to say. We've got Matt and Laura Hawkins, and they are buy and hold investors who've been at it for 20 years. And today they're going to share strategies for continuing growth, like Quentin was talking about, with student rentals, duplexes, triplexes, and garden suites. So welcome, guys.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
So Matt and Lori are serial entrepreneurs who started.
Laura.
Laura.
Close. You're so close, Quentin.
Oh, sorry. Matt and Laura are, my wife is Laura too. I should know this. Matt and Laura are serial entrepreneurs who started investing in real estate in 2004 at the age of 19. They own a thriving construction company in Stouffville called Hawkins Contracting. They love digging into the numbers, are skilled in managing large renovations. Recently, they have settled into a pattern of purchasing tired bungalows for duplex, triplex conversions, sometimes with garage conversions to garden suites and larger student rentals. Matt and Lori self-manage almost all of their properties and love to connect with other investors and talk all things real estate. Matt and Lori have three young kids, love to stay active and to be outdoors and mountain bike at any chance they can get.
Thank you.
Well, you know, we like to start off, of course, by asking the question about how you got started in real estate investing. And you, like, this is impressive. You guys were 19. Well, I don't know if you guys the exact same age.
Yeah, Matt's 1 year older than me, but yeah. So,
He's an 19. Old man. He's an
he
old
was
man.
20. Is that
we've
right?
Been together since we were 60, since I was 16. So we were together.
Wow.
At forever. So.
So we'll have to talk about how to keep that going. But also, you started at 19 years old. So. And like you said, you've been at it for 20 years. So how would you get started at such a young age?
I can't take too much credit myself. My parents kind of pushed me into it a little bit. When I graduated high school, I wanted to be an auto mechanic. So I started an auto mechanic apprenticeship. You don't really need to go to school all that much in the apprenticeship. You just go to school for 3 2-month blocks. So you get to work a lot. And I was making what I thought was quite a bit of money for a 18-year-old and 19-year-old back then, working at a car dealership. And I had a souped up Volkswagen Jetta that was lowered, and every paycheck I got, I'd spend money on upgrading the turbo or buying coilover suspension, stuff like that. And my mom kind of got fed up and said, if you're going to keep wasting your money on stuff like that, you got to start paying rent to live here. So she gave me a bit of a kick in the ass. And then shortly after that, a cottage came up for sale across the lake from my parents' cottage on Stony Lake in the Kawarthas. And it was a very basic cottage. It was probably 50 or 60 years old, never really been renovated, but it was in a nice bay and good location on a good lake. So we discussed buying it together as partners, and we did a small reno to it and rented it out on, they didn't have Airbnb back then, I don't think. At least we didn't use it. If they did, we used VRBO, but most of it was just word of mouth. So we rented it out really just like 4 or 5 months of the year because it wasn't winterized, but we did that for a couple of summers and it was okay. It would cash flow well in the summer. It would lose money the rest of the year. Overall, it kind of broke even. It kind of put a damper on my 19 and 20 year old summers up at the cottage because we'd do everything ourselves. Like when we were up at the cottage, we'd go over and cut the grass and we'd clean it, get ready for the next guests. And it took a fair bit of maintenance because it was an old property. We had septic issues on the regular stuff.
Right.
Like, so
it's like obligation.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And kind of obligation at old. The, the worst time, like when you've got your buddies up at the cottage and you're 20 years old and you've been drinking beers all day and the last thing you want to do is go and deal with a septic issue. But it was a good introduction to real estate, but I didn't really love the short-term rental model. And one of my friends had a student rental in Waterloo that seemed like a better investment to me than the short-term rental that we had. So we sold the short-term rental and I wanted to get in the student rentals. My parents weren't super supportive, I don't think, of the student rental idea back then. I think they'd heard what a lot of people kind of have the stigma of student rentals. They're going to trash your place. They're going to be difficult to deal with. And so they sent me to talk to our family friend, Harry James. Have you guys ever met Harry James?
I haven't, no.
No.
Harry James, we should try to get him to come to Jeremiah sometime.
Awesome.
Quentin, but back then he was my brother's hockey coach and he was also my parents' financial advisor, but he's no longer a financial advisor. Most of his business now revolves around real estate and Coburg and Lakefield and Port Hope, like in around that area. And so I talked to him about the idea of student rentals, and he said, yeah, it's not a probably not a bad idea. He kind of thought the same thing as my parents. That's probably not the most passive type of property you can buy. But he said, you're young, you got lots of energy, lots of time. Give it a try with the student rentals. But he said, you're probably going to want to get rid of the student rentals that you buy sooner than later and get into commercial rentals or something like that. That's a more passive investment. But we went ahead and bought one student rental and then bought another one probably about every 2 years for the next several years. And a few years later, Harry James called me and said, oh, I gotta apologize. I got to take back what I said about student rentals. My kids are all getting into university now. I see how expensive it is to get housing for the students. And I've bought a student rental for each of my kids to live in. And it seems like a decent investment thesis. And
that was good for Matt's ego.
Yeah, it was kind of cool for him to call me and suggest that maybe his first opinion wasn't right. And
how many years later was this, though? It's like 6 years later or something. And he calls you.
I don't really remember. I fact checked this story. I'm friends with his son, Justin, and I fact checked the story with Justin yesterday to make sure that I was remembering how it happened. But it was probably only a couple of years ago or a couple of years later because Justin's only 4 years younger than me. But
worked out well.
Yeah, we've really loved having student rentals and like the tenants that we get in these rentals, like
no, they're great.
They're great. They keep the properties really nice. When we have to do showings for new groups, like we'll go there and host an open house and lots of times just like sit and chat with our current student rental tenants for a couple hours about what they're doing once they're done school and stuff like that. And just like really good tenants to have and in our experience, really low maintenance.
How many student rentals did you end up with?
We ended up with 5 in Guelph and then we just bought 2 in Peterborough. So we had the 5 in Guelph. We stopped buying there in 2017. And then just in Peterborough in the last couple of months, we bought a couple there. But yeah, we have 5 in Guelph that we still hold on to.
You're still buying in the current market. So I'm assuming that the Peterborough student rental numbers are cash flow positive.
Very.
Even with the interest rates the way they are and all of that.
In Peterborough, we're doing 7-bedroom student rentals. And we actually have property managers for those too, because I quite honestly didn't want to manage them myself because we have too much going on. And it's still, it cash flows like a lot in Peterborough. So the student rental market has gone a bit crazy and we don't expect that it will last forever, especially with the recent announcement from the government about international students. But honestly, I think it'll still be fantastic. It's been a solid strategy for us for like 20 years. So we like that space.
I think sometimes people get like frustrated because they think that that there's no deals anywhere, there's no cash flow anywhere. But if you really work at underwriting and you see where the opportunities are, I think you both seem to gravitate to where the opportunities make the most sense. You know, just high level, I mean, you don't have to share too much, but like what kind of cash flow would student rental throw off after everything? So because you have a property manager in place and you probably like, I know you're both you have a contracting business, so it probably looks really nice. What is it after you've fixed it up and made it, you know, the way that you want it? What does it throw off each month?
Yeah, our Guelph ones, I haven't run the numbers on those recently, but they would, depending on the, we've refinanced our ones in Guelph like a million times. So they just kind of are evergreen there. But in Peterborough, I think on paper, Matt would know better.
Yeah, I think that we just finished 2 7-bedroom student rentals that we bought tired bungalows in the north end of Peterborough, like closer to Trent, in the high 400,000 range for both of them. And spent about $150,000 dollars renovating them, which is a fairly big reno. Like
they're pretty nasty though.
they were gross, pretty nasty, yeah. And now they're like pretty glamorous,
high-end, like luxury, like really, really nice. Yeah,
one of them we had to do a whole brand new heating system, combi boiler, and ductless air conditioners and stuff. We probably could have done it on a tighter budget, but we don't really sell anything. We want to hold on to these for a long time, so we want to get everything done at the same time. And so now both of them are rented out for $6,300 a month. So $900 a bedroom times 7 bedrooms. And I think they'd cash flow about $2,000 a month each as is. If we don't refi, we're planning on refiing, but we're also building garden suites on both of these properties. They're both corner lots, and we can add second driveways to both of the properties. And then we're building about 700 square foot, 2-bed, 1-bath garden suites on there. So if we
turn it up quite a bit,
if we didn't refi even after that, they'd each cash flow like $4,000 and something a month, but
we'd have
all
money,
kinds of money into them. So
we're not going to do that.
It's probably going to be somewhat of a interesting refi student rental with garden suite. But we think we can get it done and keep 75% loan to value, or
still be capital.
Yeah, might only end up being 65% loan to value. We're having a harder time getting mortgages these days, but even at that, they'll be cash cows as far as cash flow. Like they'll still cash flow probably $2,500 a month after the refi if we do 65% loan to value and have property.
And you got the garden suite too, yeah.
Are you pulling out, how much of your capital do you think you're going to pull out, like 80% of it or 50%?
I think probably it's going to end up being like we'll pull out 35% and we'll get 65% loan to value. We have been getting 80% loan to value up until the last few months. And one thing that I didn't really realize, and I don't know that I can explain this perfectly well, but most of our properties we own in a holdco. And when we've been using National Bank mostly for the last
amazing
year, who've been amazing. And the only way we found out about them was through Durham REI. They came and did a presentation there.
Yeah, thanks, Quentin.
And we had thought we hit the financing wall at about 10 properties, and now we have 15, and it's only because the National Bank has been able to get there. But when they are underwriting properties for us now, for some reason their policy is to not consider any rental income of the properties owned by the holdco. So we have to be able to service all of the debt, service all the mortgage payments or all the expenses of the properties we have in the holdco with our income. And like they'll give us zero credit for the rent that we bring in from that. So the more properties we're getting in our holdco, the harder it is for us to get new properties. In the last two mortgages that we've done, we've only been able to get 65% loan to value. So they are reviewing their holdco policy from what I've been told. And we're hoping that they're going to update the policy to recognize that rental income in the holdco. It's kind of silly that they don't. But for now, we're having to stick with 65% loan to value, or I think we're going to have to pivot a little bit if they don't update their policy or potentially try a different bank. Maybe another bank will
look at
it differently. But when you have as many residential mortgages as we do, it gets harder and harder to get them.
Yeah. Can I just jump in for a sec? Because I might be able to help you a little bit here. Because, I've got multiple properties that are single, like it would be called single family, but I used a BMO to do a blanket across them as a commercial. And that way it takes them out of the out of that fold that it allows you to, you know, maybe open up that room again with National. But also I've gone to the credit union, and funny enough, the same credit union is coming tonight, and I was able to blanket across a number of properties and create a line of credit to be able to access equity. Not exactly the same, but it could open up some more doors for you on that side. So, I don't know if you've looked at that before or.
We talked about a blanket mortgage before, but I think one of the challenges, and Matt does more of this stuff than I do, but I think one of the challenges we've had is that we grew so much in 2 years. So each property was at a different stage with the refi and whatever. And we had trouble kind of lining it up. So I think that probably would be our challenge, but I mean, long-term, absolutely. We need to look at something like that because every time we get a mortgage or buy a property, we're like, phew, can't believe we got that one. I don't know if we're going to get another one. So it's always like a touch and go. So we need to be, we need to kind of take a step back and take a better look at our strategy. Cause at some point we're going to have to adapt because it won't last forever.
And can I ask about the refis that you did in Guelph? You said you had the other ones.
Yeah.
So what was the process of refinancing those student rentals?
Like any other, honestly, refi, we didn't run into any issues. They didn't flag it as a student. Like it wasn't, they just came and did an appraisal and we got a refi. Yeah. There were no real questions asked. We gave them our income. We had no issues. We've refinanced all the properties multiple times in Guelph and we've never had a problem.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems lender to lender, Rob. You hear horror stories from some like lenders where the people have to go in, remove locks, remove refrigerators,
right.
Do things.
Yeah,
we've never had to do anything like that. They've always been like some of them during COVID. They didn't actually come in the house. Like they would take pictures, right? Got a couple during COVID, but otherwise, like the appraisers come, they know exactly what is happening in the house. We never hide anything, but we've never had any issues. So we've always been able to get the refis and usually at 80% if we want it. So we've been fortunate.
All of them are really nice student rentals. And almost all of our tenants over the years have kept the places clean. And I think when the appraisers come in, it doesn't shout student rental. There's some things that might do. Like lots of them have like
banner on the
wall. Banners or a collection of vodka bottles on on shelves and stuff like that students like to do, but
or the big thing of recycling that's full of beer cans.
Got a couple of those. But they're like they're well kept, well maintained. I don't think it doesn't set off a whole bunch of red flags unless they're really really looking for it. So and I honestly just think we've been lucky.
So what are
really
some of the
why the banks have an issue with student rentals at all? Like in my opinion, it's probably the most secure type of rental because we have 5 or 6 or 7 students that all combine to pay rent. And I think there's some like peer pressure to not miss a rent payment. Like knock on wood, Laura and I have been lucky over the last 20 years. We've never missed a rent payment on any of our properties. We've never had to take anybody to the landlord tenant board. But I think a big part of that is if you're one of 6 people in a student rental, and you're on one lease and you don't pay your rent, then you could face having the whole group evicted. And I think because of that, people just don't really miss rent payments. And for most of our properties, their parents pay, or like we get checks from trusts lots of times. Like affordability doesn't really seem to be all that much of an issue when you have a group of people combining their money or their parents' money or OSAP loans or stuff like that to pay. So I think that it's strange that the banks kind of discriminate against student rentals.
And you have like natural turnover, like they're going to leave. Like,
right.
And then you can raise the rent to like in a rent controlled province like Ontario, that's like, you know, really helpful to be able to do that.
The last couple of years.
Yeah, that's exactly. And that's why in mine too, I've got inquiries for young professionals every once in a while. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Got to be in school. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Sounds like you guys got some pretty nice looking horseshoes though too. I mean, no one's ever missed a payment ever on any of your properties.
Never. We've had maybe
I can't even count the number of missed payments that I've had on all of mine. Like I
have to go 15 years ago, we had one tenant or one student that wouldn't pay and we were hounding him, and then I think his dad was a co-signer, so we were hounding his dad to pay. And I had to go downtown Toronto to his dad's fish shop and collect his rent all in cash. And the money like stunk up our whole house like fish, but we got the money.
We got the money. Yeah, and, that was a
close one. Dirty that, money.
People pay a few days late.
We've honestly, horseshoes is right. We've been lucky. We're obviously super picky with our tenants and we keep our places really nice. And I think that helps. We've absolutely been lucky.
You know, what's funny is
I don't believe in luck. I think you're a good business owner. I think that you're and the byproduct is it looks lucky, but I think that you're, you know, in the right place, you're good business owners and you're, you know, you've treated your business how it should be treated. And now you look good, which is awesome. But like, you're like, the thing is, even from what you described, you went all the way downtown to pick up this money to make sure that it was done, to make sure that it was paid, right? Like, some people,
it wasn't your responsibility to do that.
Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah. And that's not a business owner's mindset. The business owner mindset is, I got to get this done because nobody else, I have nobody else to do it. I got to do it. I run. Yeah.
But Quentin, I just said I've had what does that make me? A terrible business owner?
Unlucky?
I wasn't going to say that.
I don't believe in luck either, like you just said. But I mean, you know, I one thing I will say is that
same thing with me. I've had the same thing. So it doesn't mean I'm just,
All through COVID though, like we didn't have any issues at our student rentals. And I was really surprised because I was hearing horror stories from everybody else.
Yeah.
Right. And there was not one missed payment through all of COVID in any of mine.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
You know, and so that was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
but you know, definitely every now and then. I've been to LTV, you know, going through it right now, as a matter of fact, again. So, fun stuff. So that brings us to challenges.
Yeah.
Can you so everything's just went so well for you guys. I need to hear about some bad stuff that's happened.
What are the biggest challenges that you face?
No, but you know, the thing is, you've overcome them as well. But what are some of those challenges that you have faced along the way? In 20 years, you got to have some great ones. So, and then of course, we want to hear how you overcame them.
I was talking to Laura about this last night, preparing to be on your podcast, and usually we talk about, oh yeah, we've had all these challenges and we've learned from them and overcome them. And we have had some challenges, but I think proportionately to the amount of years that we've been in real estate and the properties that we've had, I think we've been really lucky. And I think part of it goes back to the horseshoes, but I think part of it is the demographic of rental that we have. But
I think our strategy too.
Yeah,
we're pretty darn boring.
Yeah, we're pretty boring. But
slow growth.
We haven't really had that many challenges. I can't really think of anything that's happened that we lose sleep over. And I think part of that is just our attitude towards it. But I think the biggest thing that I can attribute to it is we started really slow. And like, you don't hear about people talking about starting slow too often on podcasts. Everybody wants to quit their 9-to-5 right away and scale really quickly. But like, we bought one property every 2 years for 5 years. We didn't take any private money. We didn't even know what private money was. We refinanced properties after our 5-year fixed mortgage was up. Maybe the slowest burrs ever, but we didn't know what a burr was back then. And over the 2 years, kind of from buying one property to the next, we'd save up money for the next down payment. Some of the down payments came from refi money, but a lot of it was just us saving money. We did some of the renovations ourselves. We have a construction company, but it's not the type of construction company that renovates houses. We build parks and bridges and transformer stations and soccer fields. Like, we have bulldozers and excavators and stuff like that. We don't have carpenters or electricians that work for us. But even without having a construction company, the first student rental, I went to Guelph every weekend of the summer with my friend Kevin, and we did the renovation on weekends ourselves to get it ready. But we are just boring investors, or at least we were. We're less boring.
You know what? It's mindset is what I'm getting from you guys, because we're like, you know, you're saying the refis went relatively easy and that kind of thing. But when you're looking at putting all this stuff together, some other people who are, you know, looking at it from over here instead of where you're looking at it might see the challenge completely differently. Yeah. So yeah. I think it's a matter of like what it, like perspective of what is seen as a challenge.
Like, we have had some issues. Like, we had a house catch on fire 2 years ago.
Almost blew up.
We've had multiple floods. We've had
contractors.
Yeah, bad contractors. See, that we've had.
I think it's funny that those aren't the first thing that come to your mind as far as challenges go, right? But they're
you can't insurance
paid for it. We got another contractor, but more recently we've been scaling faster, and that has brought on some challenges, mostly things that we probably shouldn't have got into because we didn't have enough control. But we just lost $130,000+ on a GPLP deal that went bad, and all of the investors' money was lost.
That was an expensive learning experience. So we won't do
lesson
that again.
On due diligence
and who to trust and who not. But
we do some private lending, and we're in the process of doing a power of sale on a property that the borrower can't pay us back. So it's not all rainbows and butterflies over here, but I think if you can start slow and get some net worth behind you, get some cash flow behind you, and kind of build up some tolerance with small issues, then the bigger issues just don't feel like that big of an issue, and you don't lose sleep over them, and you never get to the point of wanting to go back to phase one that Quentin was mentioning in the intro there, because you don't want to do this real estate thing anymore. Like, I don't think the idea has ever crossed our mind to stop investing in real estate.
No, and I think even when we lost that money, like, that hurt for sure. But when you look at how much we've made versus how much we've lost, it's just kind of the cost of doing business, really. Like, and it was, yes, do we wish we didn't do it? Of course. But will we do it again? No. So it's a lesson, and what real estate has given us compared to what we've lost is like exponential. So it just, it sucks. But like I said, we didn't lose sleep over it. It is what it is.
It's a business owner.
No, I really
business
like that.
That's a business owner mentality. It is.
Like, yeah. You can't change it. Just learn from it. Right.
That's right. You can't. But I think that there's some valuable lessons in there. Like, with the GPLP, what do you think you would, I mean, if you're interested, like, if we could just kind of dig in a little bit, because there's some learning. Those are where people can benefit a lot too. Like, what would you do differently in that GPLP situation? So
definitely not do it. So that'd be our first thing. But I think what we kind of had.
But what attracted you to it? And like, was
and
it
were
the
there red flags that you now see in retrospect?
100%. So that what attracted to us is we had some capital that we were honestly too busy to do anything with. So we had some money that we were too busy renovating properties that we needed somewhere to put the money that would grow. So we thought we had this opportunity that was brought to us, you know, hey, we'll give it a shot. It's something we haven't done. We were hoping to learn something in the process, not learning how to lose money, but we're hoping to learn about apartment buildings in the process. And that obviously that didn't happen, but I think there were some red flags, and I think that we should have dug deeper into them. I think that it was such a hot time in the market. It was kind of one of those things like you couldn't.
It was January 2022, and
yeah,
we had put quite a few offers in on properties in 2021, like the second half of 2021, got beat out in bidding wars and everything. And now we kind of look back that we're glad that we didn't buy a whole lot at that period of time. But this opportunity came along, and I would like to get into doing GPLP apartment buildings one day, or at least I think I would, yeah, as the GP. And I thought, okay, well, here's an opportunity to see what the structure is like, get some examples of contracts, learn a little bit, and
make some
hopefully make 18% return on our money. Like it's not the returns that we're used to and the stuff that we manage ourselves, but it's better than putting it in a bank, especially back then. You weren't making 5% like you are in high interest savings accounts now. So
we didn't have to do anything. Yeah, we didn't have to put any work into it really. So
we checked a reference with one person on this partner. We should have checked a lot more. We were kind of basing our opinion of this person based on their Instagram, which is a terrible idea.
Yeah, don't do that.
And I think it was a combination of an operator issue and market timing. Like, I don't think that
was there a conversion from like office to
there's a apartments? Partial conversion from main floor commercial to adding main floor residential units.
Yeah, it was a whole bunch of things went bad. Yeah. We could probably fill the whole podcast with it, but we won't. But
no, but I think I know who you're talking about. Unfortunately, this is a small business, right? So people, and she's quite well known on the Instagram piece, right?
Yeah. We don't want to say too much, but obviously didn't go the way we had anticipated. We learned a lot from it, and like I said,
I will connect you with somebody else who's involved in that too, because I think that there's probably something you can.
All of us have been talking, so I probably we'll chat.
Yeah, after, we can bond over our battle wounds.
Well, no, but it's I guess one of the pieces behind that is that attempting more than what they have done in the past is, you know, I think that was one of the pieces that, you know, they're trying to do something that they have never done, and they don't have a track record of doing that, right? Be another one. On the private lending one, where do you think the learning kind of came from in that?
I don't think there's really ton to learn about it. I think it's going to end up perfectly fine. We're first position at like 70% loan to value.
Yeah, we'll be fine. They've been paying their payments the whole time. They just can't pay the loan back. I don't think it's going to be a sob story. I think it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
It's just like an inconvenience more than anything. But that's just been a good learning experience. I've never gone through this before. But we've done other private lending deals that have been absolutely textbook picture perfect. We lend to that person all day, every day. This one's a different borrower. But anyways,
what do you do in that situation? You extend it?
I think typically you would want to extend, but we had some kind of inside scoop on what was going on with this investor and wanting to get our money back as soon as possible.
Could see the ship was sinking,
basically. Yeah, we also have other plans for that money, so we don't really want to extend it. So we gave them a short extension, kind of not even a official extension, but we held off a little while on starting the power sale process. And then after they weren't really dropping the price, like they were trying to sell it, but they weren't really dropping the price all that quickly, we said, okay, well, you obviously need some more motivation to do this, or else we're going to take over and control the sale for you. And so we've started the power of sale process, now we're partway through, and I think it's going to end up selling like organically before we have to take over over control of it, which is kind of best for everybody, I think. But if it doesn't, we still are proceeding with the power of sale process. We're not just stopping it and we don't want to have to restart again.
Just a question. Is there anybody in a second position and are there prom notes involved?
We have since learned that there are multiple of both.
But no, there's nobody in second. There are prom notes.
Sorry, unregistered prom notes. Yeah.
Unregistered prom notes?
Yeah.
Is this the...
How would that affect it though, Quentin?
We can talk offline, Quentin.
Yeah. I think I know. Oh yeah, this is so bad. But yeah, so the unregistered prom notes are screwed.
I think it doesn't affect
our position.
No, it doesn't affect your position, but you're smart because you've put yourself in a registered position with a lot of loan to value, like a lower loan to value. And that way, because, you know, you're at 70%, but after everything is said and done, you could be at 85%.
Yeah,
you know, with all the costs and stuff, but and you'll still be okay, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we did it. Like we said, going back to what we started at the beginning, we're boring. So we try to keep things. This was doing private lending was something much riskier than we had done before, but we kind of did it with a lens of being pretty conservative, like low loan to values and
never second mortgages,
always registered first position, stuff like that. So we just kept it. We tried to keep it as safe as possible.
And low value properties. Like we've lent on a bunch of properties in Cornwall at like $150,000 purchase price. And this one isn't a huge mortgage either.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's learning, right? This is like you win or you learn, right? That's all.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but we had some FOMO during the pandemic, seeing some of these people coming up from nothing, doing so many deals, scaling so quickly. But kind of looking back at it, I think the pace at which you scale is directly correlated to the amount of problems that you're going to have. And it's not always a bad idea to scale quickly and deal with those problems, but if you can deal with the problems, but back to kind of our longer term strategy of scaling slow. Like I think that if you scale slow, you're typically going to have minimal problems. And if I had to do it all again, I think I'd scale a little bit faster than we did. And that's what we're doing now, but now we're set up to better deal with the problems because we have more experience. We have more money behind us. We have.
You know what? I like that because I've scaled very slowly myself too. And there's been plenty of times where people have come to me and said, well, why aren't you doing what that person's doing? You could probably do that. And I'm like, yeah, I could probably do that. You're right. But this is the way I've chose to do it as well.
Exactly.
I remember when we had Russell Westcott, or anytime I've heard Russell Westcott talk about scaling and the way that he did it at the beginning, he was just like, that was wrong. You know, I bought as much as I possibly could. And I ended up with a bunch of crap that needed so much maintenance and it just became a nightmare. So, you know, there but that's not what sells programs.
No.
Like if I put it, and you know what, I think that information is absolutely terrible when you go how to buy 100 properties in a year, mm-hmm. you know, but that's what people want to hear. Unfortunately, they don't want to hear how to buy 2 properties in 4 years with Matt and Laura.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It wouldn't really sell.
But in reality, that is the information that people really need, I think. It's like the proper information. It's like everyone wants that magic bullet that's going to give them one. I want 100 properties. I'm going to get there in 5 years.
Yeah, I want to leave my 9-to-5. That's the biggest one too, right? That people are motivated to do that. And I think it's good to have those goals, but you have to do it the right way. Otherwise, you're not.
I think that's a different goal, right? Yeah. Like it's not a number. It's not just a random number. No. Right. It's a milestone.
Yeah.
It's a goal, like it's a life goal. Right.
And everybody's is different. Kind of not everybody's is going to be the same. I mean, what you're doing now is you're also looking at garden suites and triplexes and things like that in order to, you know, to gain future value on the asset. So you're looking at the piece of property, not only today can it cash flow, but what else can I do to increase the density, bring it to its highest and best use, and be able to make it work. Mm-hmm. Have you built any garden suites? Are you thinking about it? What's your plans around that?
Yeah, we have one garage conversion that it was an existing building that we converted in Hamilton that just finished a little while ago, and that went well. And then I'll let Matt talk about we have a bunch of properties that are perfect for garden suites. So we picked these ones in Peterborough to do first. So we're in the permitting process now, but Matt's been dealing with this so far.
Yeah, we're expecting permits for 2 garden suites in Peterborough in the next week or two.
Hopefully, hanging forever.
Yeah, it's
it's been months and
it's
months.
It's taken a while. One of them, we had to get a minor variance. So that took a while. And then I think that I think Peterborough is still kind of learning the mm-hmm. garden suite permitting process. And so things aren't perfectly clear kind of what you have to submit, and the reviews seem to take quite a bit longer than getting a permit for a duplex or something like that. But overall, it'll be fine. Both of the properties are rented out as of May 1st, but we're going to start
the main house. Yeah.
The main houses are rented out as of May 1st, but because these are corner lots, we can just like fence off part of the backyard, and we're going to have separate driveways into them. So we can build our garden suites with minimal disruption to the tenants. We're also in the planning stage of another garage conversion in Hamilton. We close on a property in Hamilton that we're gonna
next week
duplex the house, and then convert the garage into a garden suite next week. I wasn't completely sold on the garden suite strategy.
Okay. Oh, sorry, Quentin, saying something.
No, I was just wondering, how do you know when it's worth it to do it or not?
That's what I was going to say, too. It's not just, hey, I've got a corner lot and I'm able to do it.
Yeah.
What makes it worth it?
It's a capital intensive process, and you don't know whether or not what you're going to get back on a refi. So it's a bit of a gamble because they're so new, right? But yeah.
I think it the main thing is, are you fairly confident that you can refi based on the updated value with the garden suite there, and I think that like the appraisers don't really have very many comps for garden suites, but if they can comp it against a triplex, like in Peterborough, you probably know better than I do, but like duplexes are, I don't know, somewhere in the mid sixes or maybe $700,000 for a really nice duplex, and triplexes are $750,000 to $950,000 kind of at the top end for a nice triplex. So if you can build a garden suite and have a duplex, and if you're happy with a $800,000 or $900,000 appraisal, I don't think it's all that hard to get that appraisal. Like in Hamilton, we refied our duplex plus garden suite there, and we got a $980,000 appraisal there that we were happy with. And I think we're going to end up probably like in the $900,000 range in Peterborough on the appraisals, but it's going to let us pull 80% of our construction costs of the garden suites out. And like, it's not going to be a perfect burr and like that, but if you only have 20% of your cash into a garden suite, and you are getting, like, we're projecting to get $2,200 a month rent plus utility, something like that, for these 2-bed, 1-bath garden suites, the ROI is pretty high. Like, I think I ran the ROI numbers on our Hamilton garage unit, and the garage in Hamilton is only 250 square feet. It's a bachelor, and it rents for $1,700 a month plus utilities. And our ROI on the money left in that's about 55%. So
annual ROI is 55?
That's annual with an assumption of 3% appreciation.
Okay.
So it's not super easy to make 50-something% ROI elsewhere. Like you can do it if you can do some really good burrs, but we just like the fact that it's as of right. Like you can build these garden suites. You're not buying a property, gambling on whether you're going to be able to build the garden suite, or like in the bigger multifamily stuff. One thing that's stopped us from going into that is, to us, it feels like you've got to gamble a little bit on how many units are you going to be able to turn over. So with garden suites, it's nice that you buy it knowing that you're going to be able to build a garden suite. And if you've done them in the past, you can be fairly certain of what your budget's going to be, kind of plus or minus 10 or 15% contingency, something like that. But the ROI in Peterborough, I don't think will be as high because they're new builds, and the cost to build them compared to the rent we're going to get is going to be lower. But still be 30 something percent ROI.
Just 30%. You know what? It's amazing, right? Like this is, people don't understand when they look at real estate. I mean, the only other places I see this happening is active businesses where you can achieve that type of return. And maybe if you gamble on crypto or something, yeah. Right? But this is, I mean, it's boring. Like you keep saying, it's boring. It works. You know, it's just, you know, when you look at the success rate of real estate as compared to other businesses, you know, real estate is like 85% successful, has a 85% success rate, mm-hmm. as compared to other businesses that go into foreclosure or go under, right? So it's such a great to hear when you're, especially when you're using those KPIs, like the mm-hmm. ROI, you know, IRR, cash flow, all of those things. You know, you're really, again, treating it like a business. So that's,
yeah, I will disagree with you there. I don't think this is boring whatsoever. Not whatsoever. Like I'm all in on this stuff. It excites me. Like, and you know, it's not like you don't want to get emotionally carried away by going, yeah, I'm doing a garden suite no matter what.
Yeah.
But if you have that property and you have that potential and you can do it at any time and you just know that,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
you wait for the right time or whatever it is.
But it's boring day to day. It's boring day to day. Like you're not like
we'll agree to disagree.
Like an Airbnb, like you're always kind of working in it.
Yeah, right? But that's not fun to me. I want that.
Yeah.
They're all fun to me.
Yeah. And I say, like we say boring, but like we're the biggest real estate nerds ever. But it like, but boring is in like predictable, more or less predictable. Like if you're in real estate for long enough, you're like, it's a long-term game.
There's no high stakes gambling is what you're saying. Like you're not like, spinning the wheel and just waiting to see where it lands.
Exactly. But yeah.
I think you can get the most boring.
I would say stable rather than boring.
Yes, and stable's good. Yeah, and I was just going to say, we get really great tenants in these things too, and they're stable, like great, like AAA tenants, and that is really attractive to us too. We try to make the prop, like all the properties that we do are like top rents, top finishes, and we get top tenants. Like you kind of get what you get, right? So we like that demographic too. We like that.
And when parents walk through, you know, they're thinking, yes, this is where I want my kid to live. They're not like, no way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's some downtown Peterborough that I've been in, even after they're renovated. And I'm like, this is not going to rent, you know?
No, and same with your duplexes and triplexes, the same thing. Like our non-student rentals, like they're all like done up to the nines, and we get great tenants, we get great rents. So it's been working for us. And like I said, we like that space and we self-manage all of our own properties. And those are the types of tenants that we want to be dealing with. They're like great tenants. They're great people. And it's a good space for us. We like that strategy.
So has your active business helped in the like the garden suites or any of that other stuff? Like how have these two things meshed together?
I think as Matt kind of mentioned earlier, our construction company doesn't do this type of construction, but Matt's knowledge of construction is incredibly valuable from like 100%. So he manages all of our renovations and does it like he's managing through, like we have people that help us, but like the permitting process, and he understands all the technical stuff. So his experience is absolutely valuable. Probably the biggest thing that's helped with the connection between our construction company and our real estate business is how we have it structured that we own our real estate in a holding company, and we can take dividends from our construction company and flow it through to our holding company, like tax protected. So we don't pay tax until we take
tax deferred.
Sorry.
Tax free from corporation to corporation. So
yeah,
if you pay $100,000 dividend to our hold co, you still have $100,000. Whereas if you paid it to us personally,
yeah,
you'd have 50-something thousand dollars left to invest. So I think, if anybody
because because the structure of both is the same, the ownership structure is the same.
Yeah.
Is why you can flow it through.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's and we'll pay tax on that money when we pull the money out of our hold co. But
yep.
I think, not everybody can do that. Like if you're a T4 employee, you can't do that. But if you are a real estate investor and trying to consider what kind of active job you want to have, I think it's worth considering, can you do that active job and get paid in a corporation? Like I think real estate agents can do this now with the prec or really any business that you're going to get paid through or corporation, you can do it. But
it's been huge.
Yeah, that's helped us a lot. Yeah,
twice the buying power, really. So that's been very, very valuable to us and been able to make a scale twice as fast, really.
Yeah. And we do use our construction company a little bit for helping our real estate business, deliveries and pickups. I've got a guy in our construction company that does deliveries and pickups for the construction, and we'll deliver and pick up stuff for our rental properties. We've done a little bit of landscaping on our rental properties. One of our construction crews is going to do all the excavation and backfill for these two new garden suite foundations. And we have to run new water lines and sanitary lines. So we're going to do that stuff with our own construction company. But I would like to mesh the two together more in the future, because I think there's a big opportunity there. Like we have a very experienced full-time accountant in our construction company that has capacity beyond what we need him in the construction company. And I think he'd be able to help us in the real estate business. And we have two project administrators that have capacity kind of different times of the year. That's kind of underutilized, that they could help in the real estate business. And we have six construction crews. It's just the type of construction that we do in our construction business is different than, like, we don't build any houses in our construction business, so we don't have that type of people. But eventually I'd like to get into like some development stuff that we could buy a piece of vacant land and develop it into a plaza, and then we can do all of the excavation, the sewers, the concrete work, the paving, stuff like that with our construction company and feed
Holding company. Yeah.
Yeah. Our holding company can feed work to our construction company. And that's what I would like to do. We're just struggling a little bit to transition out of the
really comfortable
3- unit conversions that we've been doing into bigger stuff, but
yeah, jumping into the bigger pond. Yeah. It's just so comfortable here. We like it. The numbers are really good. We know exactly what to expect. It's very boring, like we were talking about. But at some point our, like we talked about earlier, we'll be forced to make that change or to do more creative financing, like we were talking about earlier, Quentin. But yeah, so I think there's opportunity to mesh our businesses a little bit more in the future, but it hasn't really happened yet.
All right. So this next question has backfired on me the last couple of guests that we've had, and it's actually becoming quite disappointing.
No, not this time.
Pressure.
Well, okay, look, we're doing this for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Like we're trying to improve our lifestyle. It's not all about just status and building and money, right? So so the question is here, like you talked about in the bio, how you guys love to go mountain biking, but what are some of the other freedoms that you have enjoyed, like real estate investing has afforded you?
Yeah.
I'd really like to hear about that, because I think it's important that we're doing this for not just to, you know, as a status symbol.
100%. I think, so for me, I feel like it's probably had the biggest impact. I don't know, I guess that's on both of us, but we have three young kids. And after a third kid was born, I didn't go back to my 9-to-5. And part of that was our construction company, but a big part of that was real estate. We had the financial security, financial, whatever you want to call it, behind us that we could make that decision. And I had a great, great government job. It was awesome. And I loved it. And it was hard to walk away from it, but it afforded me the ability to do so many other things. So that is a huge blessing. I pick up my kids from school every day. I drive them to school every day. I'm there for hockey practice, like all that stuff I can do. And that's always been kind of a dream of mine to be able to work and have be around with our kids when they need me. So that's been massive. And that I will attribute mostly to real estate. Vacations, we spend a lot of money on our credit card. We get a lot of points. So we go on like 4 to 5 trips a year, really from that. So that's been pretty incredible. That's been really nice. But I think the main thing is financial security. Our goal has always been, I think we have a bit of a scarcity mindset of, you know, what if our business doesn't do well next year and it did well this year, but it's not going to happen next year. And knowing that we have real estate there to kind of back us up and know that at any point, if things did go really bad in our construction business, like we're totally fine. We can, you know, feed our kids and live the life we want to live. And just having that financial background or sort of financial backbone. I don't know. I'm lost for words here, but it has meant a lot. And we can make decisions based on what we want to do and not for monetary reasons, right? We can live the life we want to live. And most of that is thanks to real estate. So it's been a truly life-changing endeavor for us. Like we started super small and we had these big dreams when we were 19, and now Matt's knocking on 40 in about a month. So we're there, and it's been pretty cool to see how little changes a long time ago can have such a huge impact, because we live a very different life than and a better life than we ever really imagined. And that's really all from real estate. So it's been a pretty awesome.
That's awesome. That was a great response. See, Rob, it was good. I mean,
did I just hope yet?
No, there's hope left still. That's great. Because I really do want to hear stuff like that. Like, and it's huge to be able to stay home and you know, look after the kids.
Huge. And I still want to work. So I still work a lot.
Yeah.
And probably I'd like to admit, but I'm working on that. But I'm, like I said, I drop my kids off every day. I pick them up every day. I'm there for our kids are all in sports. I'm there for all those things. And I can help other families do those things who, you know, both their parents work. So like those types of things are so important to me. To be able to be in a position where we can do that is incredible. It's very fulfilling and exactly what I hope that our life would be. So very, very fortunate to be in the position that we're in. And then we get to go mountain biking sometimes. Like after this, it's a beautiful day. I'm going to go hit the trail. So it's, you get awesome to have some flexibility. It's awesome.
Yeah. I like the mountain biking too. I do that on Fridays usually. Well, when the trail, I think the trail is going to be pretty not muddy now.
I think Durham Forest is open. I'm going to hit the Roots Trail after this. But
it's supposed to rain like 30 millimeters tomorrow though. So Friday.
You got to get out there.
You got to go today or nothing.
Go today. Right? It's beautiful outside.
Or next week. So if you can think of a piece of advice or information that's always stuck with you and how has it helped you?
I think I don't want to beat a dead horse, but just back to the idea of you don't have to try to keep up with some of these investors that you see on social media. You don't have to quit your 9-to-5. Laura and I love our jobs. Laura has like multiple part-time jobs, but I work like 40 to 50 hours a week in my construction company, and I don't have any plans of stopping the construction company, and you don't have to. You can stick with your 9-to-5 and invest on the side, and there's nothing wrong with buying 10 or 15 rental properties between the ages of 30 and 65 or something like that and retiring with 15 rental properties. Like you'd be so far ahead of most people doing that, and you can keep the stress level down, scaling slowly like that. And you can keep qualifying for mortgages because you have active income. And it's not for everybody. Like a lot of people want to quit their 9-to-5, so they have to scale differently than us. But for us, we just try to live below live beneath our means, spend less money than we make, invest the rest. And it works for us. And I think it probably works for a lot more people than it seems like it does on social media.
Yeah. You don't really scream from the rooftops about our, you know, your boring investment strategy like ours. So, but there's a lot of people doing it and it's doing a lot of good things for a lot of people. Just slow and steady.
I love that. Yeah. You know, I think that that has obviously been the overarching theme of the show too, is that you don't have to keep up with the Joneses mm-hmm. on everything.
Yeah, it's so good to hear because you see so much. And I mean, I'm guilty of it as well, right? You know, just you're posting stuff about things you're doing. And you know what? It's not healthy sometimes, I guess.
Oh, right. Right.
But it's so nice to hear, you know, the do it slow. Don't use partners. You know, just build it yourself. Own 100% of it. Keep mm-hmm. growing. Refinance, do, you know, keep going. And who knows, I think you're probably naturally going to end up in larger buildings eventually.
Or that development that they want.
Yeah. Because the, like, when you think about it, your asset base in a larger building is going to be 10 times as much. You're mm-hmm. just doing the same thing with a larger property. The fact that you can do it with a smaller property and you've been so successful at it, I would think that you're going to do the same thing. It's just going to take you longer, yeah. But the upside is much higher.
Yeah. Right? Definitely. We just need to jump in at some point, yeah. A little bit of fear. Yeah. And we've actually offered on and had we've had a few buildings under contract, and just for a variety of reasons, we didn't move forward with them, but I know we'll get there at some point, but it's going to take a bit of a leap of faith to get there because we're so comfortable in where we are. But I mean, it was uncomfortable and you know, you have to grow to be uncomfortable. So we'll get there probably sooner rather than later, because I think we're running out of racetrack on our on financing front. So our hand might be forced, but that's not always a bad thing.
No, what change is always good when you're a business owner and you know how to adapt to change, right? You have that mindset, that growth mindset, where, you know, it's just another piece of learning to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all you need are following people that have already done it before, yes. Right? That makes it so much easier for you. Then you don't have to, you can always, you know, kind of get through the finance and get through the due diligence, figure out strategies, right? So yeah, I think, you know, it was really great hearing from both of you and hearing your story and, you know, connecting with you like this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just thinking too, it's like, unlike a lot of our guests, you guys don't, you're not really even asking for anything. You're not promoting real, what, okay. Somebody needs some stuff built, like a bridge or a playground. So how are they going to get in touch with your construction company?
So our construction company is on Instagram as well. It's Hawkins Contracting Services. So, and you can reach out to, like, through Sydney Investments. We're on Instagram as well. Sydney_investments. And you can reach out. Matt and I are both on that account. But yeah, if you need a nice park built, you got a soccer field you want built, Matt's your guy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And how do you spell that? Sorry, it's just Cindy, like C-I-N-D-Y?
It's SIDNEY_investment.
SIDNEY, Sydney.
Okay. Yeah, so that's us on Instagram. Gotcha. Hawkins Contracting is our obviously our active business. And yeah, feel free to reach out. We love chatting real estate. Matt loves chatting construction. So
awesome.
Have any interest in that, yeah.
All that info is going to be in the show notes. And I want to thank you guys, because really, like, you know, most people are looking for JV partners, or they've got a program they're pushing or something like that, right? And they come on and they're sharing all that for maybe not selfish reasons, but they're definitely getting something more out of it, I think, than you guys are. So I just want to really say thank you for coming on and sharing all this with us.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We always love chatting real estate, so you don't have to twist our arm, but I appreciate being invited and happy to chat with you guys and meet you virtually. And Quentin, we'll see you tonight. We're at the Durham REI every month. It's awesome. We joined I think about a year ago, and it was the best decision we ever made. We should have joined years ago. So it's highly recommended if anybody's on the fence. A little plug for Quentin. Oh. But the Durham REI is an incredible group. And every time we go, we've made a new connection or we found new financing. Like, it's a very, very valuable room to be in. So highly recommend if you're not.
I'll second that. I wouldn't know anything. I wouldn't have progressed whatsoever, I don't think, along any of the trajectory that I did without it. That is 100% for sure.
Thank you. Thanks, both.
And on that note,
really good. Yeah.
how do people get in touch with you, Quentin?
Yeah, you can go to durhamrei.com or you can go to quintindesouza.com, the best ways to get a hold of me. And how about you, Rob?
Awesome. Well, you can reach me at rob@mrbreakthrough.ca. And again, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you on the next show.